Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
We have to stop spending over $1 trillion more than we take in every year. And so to do that, I'm going to eliminate every non-essential, expensive program I can find. That includes Obamacare. And I'm going to work to reform and save.
Eliminate the boondoggle. No.
Welcome to the Savage Nation. It's heating up out there in the Savage Nation. I'm back from a hiatus, or shall I say a Hegira to New York City. A Hegira to New York City, the land of my, well, where the graves of my ancestors reside. Let's put it to you that way. I'm back in cool San Francisco. I had to go back there to see a medical specialist, and I did. Apparently, the doctors are different on the east and on the west. And nothing to worry about, but I did get a chance to see some sites in New York, which I'll talk about, including my father's store, still a slum. People pay $1 million to live on that street in some slum. The hipsters are running around with cigarettes in their hands, but the trash bags are still 3 feet high in New York City. The streets stink. I mean, I love New York. I have no idea why people live there, but I love it. It's a great place to visit, as they say. I haven't any idea why real estate is booming in Manhattan. The trash bags are 3 feet high. Black bags of trash, 2 feet away from people sitting in outdoor tables having dinner. They don't even see the garbage. The city is dirtier than when I was a kid. See, in my day, there were garbage men in New York City. Garbage men in brown uniforms who went around with trucks, and you put your trash out in cans. Nobody threw garbage in the street in black bags. These bags are biodegradable? No. They sit in a landfill for several millennia, I would guess. They never break down. And yet the New Yorkers, who are, oh, so sophisticated when it comes to saving the environment, literally eat, sleep, and drink around garbage. Well, hey, who's to account for a man's taste? I'll tell you more about the trip in a few minutes, including the fact that on the way back, as we approached 43,000 feet cruising altitude in my friend's Gulfstream, we went forward to talk to the pilots and noticed that they had their oxygen masks on. So we assumed it was, you know, a test, like a training thing, because I had just got the turkey sandwich I was going to eat to have a beer. I walked forward, the pilot's mumbling like he looked like a B-29 pilot in a World War II movie, and he screams, "Get your masks on. Get back. It's an emergency. Get your masks on." And the masks all come dangling down in the seats. Ran back, put the mask on. Mrs. S. started to cry. Young Mr. S. held her hand as the plane went down 10,000 feet. I got out a prayer card. I felt nothing. I don't know what it is. I don't know what's wrong with me. I felt no fear, no joy, no elation. I felt nothing. I don't know if that means I'm crazy. I felt nothing. Is there a psychiatrist in the house? Why did I feel nothing at the thought the plane was going to crash? Actually, all I thought was how sad it would be that my son, who was so young, would, you know what I'm saying? I didn't think about me. I don't know what it means. I have no idea. But nevertheless, it didn't. Turns out a valve that controls the pressure in the plane jammed up. And we had to go down to a lower altitude to fly home, which we did. No big deal. Could have been a big deal. How do you know what is, right? So now we got the Penn State sex abuse scandal. We got the NAACP booing Romney and the moron Pelosi saying that he went there to get booed. I mean, I can't believe this. You talk about blaming the victim. This is beyond comprehension. Romney goes to the NAACP and these rude people have the nerve to boo him because he says he wants to balance the budget. And the morons in the media, like, you know, the sycophants of the left-wing fanatics say, oh, he went there to get booed. I was watching a show the other night on one of the history channels, and I saw that the old Thompson submachine gun, you know, remember that one used in World War II? The Thompson submachine gun? It was called the Chicago typewriter during the era of Al Capone. The Chicago typewriter, the Thompson submachine gun. Well, hasn't come to that level yet under Obama, but it's close. We don't exactly have the Chicago typewriter, but we have a type by keys. You know what I mean? Tip, tip, tip. Hunt and peck method as opposed to a typewriter. Nevertheless, the keys are clicking and the people are dying. And old Godfather Emmanuel can't do anything about it. At least in New York City, they have a stop and frisk law. Yes, they're stopping and frisking gangbangers and taking their guns away. And guess who's screaming about it? The liberals. They're claiming it's racial profiling. Well, let me ask you a question. If you were a cop walking on the streets of Manhattan and you saw a guy walking around with tattoos on his neck with his pants hanging down underneath his you-know-what, who would you stop and frisk? Him? Him? Or the married with children mother on the Upper East Side? Morons. Anyway, these are some of the things that are bouncing around in my brain here. There are a lot of other things I'm going to talk about on the program today, from airplanes to who I met on the streets to the bias in the newspaper to all of these other topics. And you can call me at 1-800-449-8255. Any topic is fair game. Let's begin with Eric in Houston, Texas. Go ahead, Eric. You're on the Savage Nation.
Oh, God. Why don't you stop talking?
I have no idea what you just said. Start again. What?
Oh, at the NAACP meeting, why would he stop talking when the rabble started booing? You can't let that happen. You can't
Eric, you see, that's a talking point of the fascist left that was invented, because Romney actually didn't stop talking. But the fascist left invented the fact that he stopped talking when the booing started. So you're blaming him for the rude people at the NAACP, the uncivil civil rights group boos a man because they don't agree with him? And you're blaming him for being booed?
I know what you're saying, but I'm saying why let...
Get off my show. Take a walk. That is what you're saying, because that's what the illegitimate left is saying. You think I don't read? Of course I read. Is everybody on vacation? Does anyone listen to anybody? Is anyone listening to the Savage Nation? Again, the phone number is 1-800-449-8... Well, I don't know the number anymore. I forgot it. I was gone for a few days. 1-800-449-8255. National Association for the Advancement of Colored People in the year 2012. NAACP, National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, who boo a white man who they don't agree with. That's a great, great piece of public relations for the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. Unbelievable to me. Unbelievable to me what goes on in this world and what people get away with under the guise of being some kind of protected group. It's beyond comprehension. And yet Pelosi the genius, Pelosi the high IQ Pelosi, the distinguished Nancy Pelosi who never did insider trading, the distinguished Nancy Pelosi who never ever jammed a bill down anyone's throat, says Romney made a calculated move to get booed at the NAACP, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. At least Romney had the guts to appear before the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. That's more than we could say for Obama. Now, why would Obama not appear before the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People? Could anyone explain that one to me? Why would Barack Hussein Obama, the first black president, not appear before the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People? I don't understand that. Does anyone have an answer to that? Because Romney went there. I mean, he got booed. Guess they don't like him. But he had the nerve to at least not lie to them, not pander to them. He had the nerve to say he's cutting Obamacare when he becomes president. You got to hand it to Romney. At least he's starting to stand up for something. He's starting to show that he's made of something. Again, I'll give out the number, 1-800-449-8255. Las Vegas, Chris, you're on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, I just wanted to say that I understand that you have a huge burden. Every morning you wake up and maybe have to ask yourself, do I have to go to work today? And then deep inside of you, something just draws you forward to plod and pull together all of this things that you bring to us every day, which we're so thankful for. And I want to know, I feel your pain, and not in the Bill Clinton way. I really feel your pain because I have a similar experience every day.
Well, I'm not going to go into crying for myself. Life has been good to me. I mean, when the plane, I didn't know where it would be. I didn't really feel anything. All I thought was, I've had a good life, and I got out a prayer card, and I started to pray. That's all. I felt bad for the thought that my son wouldn't live. I honestly, that's all that went through my mind. But I had no fear, no feelings at all. There are things going on in my life that I choose not to talk about that one day will come out, and you'll be astonished to believe that I've lived through them.
Not surprising, considering the people that you talk about. And
Phone conversations have been wiretapped for the last several years. I am the only member of the American media banned in Britain. I'm the only member of the American media who's been wiretapped, and nobody in the media gives a rat's behind about what's going on because I am the ultimate outsider. But I bear it. I bear the cross. It's that simple. That's the road I'm on. That's the road God put me on. That's the road God wants me on. That's the pain God wants me to bear.
I think he knew that.
Thank you for the call. Thanks for the call. I'm not here to complain. I'm not here to complain at all. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. I can confirm a password breach. My system has been breached. I can confirm. It explains an awful lot, but you'll find all about it when the time's. Elon in New York on WOR. Go ahead, please.
Yes, sir. First, I want to say it's an honor to be able to speak to you. And obviously, Romney is listening to you because the guy was nowhere, and now all of a sudden he shows up to the NACP, and he says exactly what you've been saying.
Well, I don't know. It has to do with me, but everyone's goading him to get out there and say something. Everybody's been saying get out of the edge of the ring and start fighting.
Well, you know. I've been listening to you every day, and I've been screaming for this guy to finally stand up, and I know he didn't hear me, so he must have heard you.
Elon, are you in New York City, per se?
I used to be. I moved to New Jersey, so now I'm a New Jersey resident.
No, the weather was pretty awful when I got in on Sunday. Hot, the humid, I couldn't believe it. The smell of the garbage in the Manhattan, jeez, it was awful. Thanks for the call. No, I couldn't believe it. I get in, you know, I went down to my store, you know, my father's store was on Ludlow Street with a video camera. I actually went and bought a video camera, figuring I'd have some spare time in addition to seeing the doctor, whatever. I couldn't believe it. I mean, the street was teeming with restaurants, bars. But there was the store. Now it's a bar where my father toiled his whole life. It's now some hipster bar. But the funeral parlor is still there. The exact funeral parlor building is still there. The streets are disgusting. They're dirty. They're hideous. I walked down the street with my son, and I said, I got to show you the luncheonette where the famous fly in the tuna story occurred. You know, he's a grown man. You know, I don't know if it meant anything to him where my father, I came back with a tuna sandwich once to the market. I hated that place. I hated the streets. I was afraid of it as a kid. You know, the bums, the criminals. He said to me, you got to learn to be tough. Go out and get me lunch. He would do it every day, and I was afraid to go out, but he made me. So I go out and get the tuna sandwich. I must have been 5 years old. I come back crying because I open it up. There was a fly in the tuna. My father turned red. His neck swelled. The veins started to swell. He grabbed my hand, threw the stand up, ran down the street holding my hand, ran into that little ugly, disgusting luncheonette and said, how dare you give my son a tuna sandwich with a fly in it? So the greasy counter man looks at him and says, let me see the sandwich. He opens it up. He sees the fly in the tuna. He says, so what? I didn't charge you for the fly. Now, you think it's an old joke. It isn't. Unfortunately, it was true. But that luncheonette was still there. It's become a Mexican restaurant now. It's as dirty as it was then. As dirty as it was then. On the corner, there's a deli called Katz's. I could not believe that on the side of this Katz's delicatessen, the very same inscriptions from like World War II were still up there. Could not believe it. You know, I went in there just as the doors were closing and they wouldn't let us in because they were closed, but there were some nice black guys there and Hispanic guys. I said, look, I grew up. It's okay. I just wanted to show it to... They said, come on in, come on in. I said, are the French fries still as good? I mean, they were closed. These are nice guys. See, I'll tell you something about racial things that you don't understand. A lot of what goes on in this country between races that is good, the vermin in the media don't want you to know. They want you to think that blacks hate whites and whites hate blacks. They want you to think that the races don't get along. That's how they divide and conquer. And believe me, Obama's not too far away from the vermin in the media with regard to dividing the races. I don't see it wherever I go. I don't see it wherever I go. I don't see blacks and whites hating each other. I'm sure it exists. I don't see it, though. I see this generation of black kids, frankly, with almost no racism. Almost none. Almost none. But you wouldn't know that. The media wants you to think that blacks hate you so you could hate them. They live off hatred, as does the Democrat Party. So... that's all. It's my one man's view. Streets were disgusting, dirty, horrible. And there are the hipsters, all the white kids, the white hipsters running around. Everyone's smoking a cigarette, all the environmentalists, all the genius global warming experts, all smoking cigarettes, living next to garbage, paying $1 million for an apartment. That's still a slum. I looked at the buildings. I said, they're the same slum that was here when the gangs in New York was in New York. It was like from the gangs in New York era, like 1870. It was like from the era of 1870, 1880, 1890. They're still living in them. But they're like, I don't know what they're paying, but they're so cool. And then there's the girls in the bar at night. They're having a glass of wine. They're alcoholics. They're alcoholics. They're no different than the Bowery bums, like Louis the Bum. But because it's a glass of wine that they swirl, they think they're different.
I'm leaving on a jet plane. I don't know where.
It is the Savage Nation. I'm glad to be back. I mean, I missed the show. I had to go there. 3-day trip. Unbelievable. Manhattan's so great, I'm thinking of moving there. I know, garbage bags and all. The pomposity of the liberals on the Upper East Side is where I could spend the rest of my life, in and around the Metropolitan Museum. And seeing the people is a lifetime of pleasure to see the BS that people put on. The outfits, the dog walking, the cars, everyone's a star behind their car. Everyone is the star of their own reality show. I never saw anything like it. Every woman, every second, she has cameras following her in her own mind. From the toilet to the closet to the street to the restaurant, there she is. Now I'm getting in a car. Now I'm getting out of a taxi. The way I hail a cab, it should be a reality show. It's time for lunch. It's time for my nails. It's time for yoga. It's time for Prozac. It's time for Mozac. It's time for Chojack. I've never seen anything like it. Everyone's a star behind their car. That's why I want to move to Manhattan. I fit right in. Everyone's walking around with an invisible camera hanging over their head. Used to be halos over people's heads. Now it's invisible cameras following their each and every move. Let's go to the callers. Chuck Houston, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, Mike, first of all, you have a very keen sense of humor.
I hope so. It's all I got left.
Well, you really, really do. But the reason I'm calling is I was a co-pilot once and I was crashing. And at that moment, I was thinking about really getting the engine started. I don't really remember thinking about the family, but I can understand what the people would be thinking in the back of the plane. And I think the fact that you thought of your family says that your dominant motive is probably love of family, and your peace was found in that moment in Christ. That's what else can you say about it? Because it's a
I don't know. I don't know. I pulled out a prayer card. It wasn't praying to Jesus, by the way. And the thing is, I prayed to God. To me, I don't want to go into who I prayed to. I prayed to God, and all I asked for was peace. I asked for nothing else, and the only thing I felt was a sadness for my son. Nothing else. I didn't fear anything. And I thought that maybe there was something wrong with me, to be honest with you. But thanks, Chuck. I spoke to the pilot afterwards, and he told me that the minute it happened, when the valve failed, he didn't know what happened. All he knows is that the pressurization failed, and the plane started to beep. And he said he went to motor memory, and the motor memory is throttle down, nose down, go down to the altitude that you can breathe without a mask. Because, that, you see, that's what you're supposed to do as a pilot. You get down to a level where you can figure out what's wrong with the pressurization when you don't need pressure, you know what I'm saying, and oxygen. But he, meanwhile, he had the mask on. I thought it was like walking into a B-29, you know, like a movie. You know, tower, kind of emergency. Well, I didn't know what that was going on. Get in your seat. Get the mask on. Blah, blah, blah. It's not a big deal. All it did was ruin my ability to have another beer. Because at that point, I didn't want to eat or drink the rest of the flight home. All I wanted to do was get back to San Francisco and my dog. So here I am sitting at my desk, my broadcast desk. The world is good. The bay is good. The birds are good. The dog is good. My dog is underneath the broadcast desk like an RCA Victor dog, a little 10-pound poodle. I mean, he must have missed me because I missed him. Manhattan's just amazing. It's an amazing situation. I love dogs, right? So now, don't take this wrong. I'm sorry. There are too many dogs in Manhattan. I've never seen filth like this in my life. Forget the ladies who used the blue bag from the New York Times for what it was made for. You know, the paper's printed primarily for the ladies in Manhattan to use the blue bag to pick up dog droppings. That we understand. They don't even use a newspaper anymore. They use the blue bag. That's become a very big deal. The price of the paper, what they could do with that Sunday paper, that's for like a big dog. I mean, the Sunday New York Times, you know what I'm saying? They could get a pet horse, a small horse with that one. But after dinner, as I'm walking back from a disgusting Persian restaurant that my friend insisted I eat in because it was so great, horrible food, the worst, horrible. It was hot and muggy and the smell of the dog thing. I could never, ever think that a dog could live in that city, you know? Could not. So, I mean, what do you do with this situation? You know, I'm a dog lover. Let's take additional callers, and you're welcome to call me at 1-800-449. You can call about the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People booing Mitt Romney. You can call about the Thompson submachine, once called the Chicago typewriter, and what's going on in Chicago now, not too far from that one. And I'll take your calls on this and other topics. Let us begin with, I don't know, Houston, Texas again. I'm big in Texas. Maybe I should move to Texas. I love Texas. The weather's worse than Florida. I'd be there in a minute. I can't take the humidity and heat, but the people are the best in America in many ways, in Houston, in Texas, rather. I mean, everyone I talk to says it's a world unto itself. It's the antithesis to the stupidity of the Upper East Side and the idiocy of San Francisco. So let's go to Texas. Alan, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Dr. Savage, I love your old-time stories growing up in New York. And, of course, I don't know the city, but I was always wondering, do you have any stories about the mafia guys coming in there trying to shake down your old man?
It's a good story, but the truth is he did know someone who was allegedly someone in that world who didn't come in to shake him down, but he came in to play Pinochle.
Oh, okay, because I know you remember that scene in The Sopranos when they walk into Starbucks and try to shake it down.
No, I got to tell this story. It's a good one. And by the way, it's funny that you ask it because Train Tracks, which will be out in November, my storybook right after the election, which I know is going to be a big hit because people are going to be dying to forget the election, does not have this story in it. So I can tell it to you now on the show. It's a true story. So my father has this little store with other, you know, each one has a booth and they sell used goods, antiques, whatever. There's a guy who comes around in an unmarked, like a junky two-door old Plymouth to collect rents in the tenements on that very street because he owned a lot of the buildings down there at the time, him and his friends did, and they would collect rents. He'd come around and collect. If they didn't pay, he gave him a beating, whatever. And he was a really rough-looking guy, comes in. But he came in the store not to shake anyone down. He came in to get away from the mean streets and play Pinochle with my uncle. And here's the funny part. I mean, we all knew who he was. We knew he was one of these people. You know, you're told and they whisper, oh, he's that guy, Jackie, you know, watch out. Blah, blah, blah. So you have a respect for the guy because you're afraid of him, right? Even as a kid, but you're looking at him, you figure he's packing heat, he's this, he's that. But he was a rough guy, you could see, built like a little bear. So it never bothered anybody. So he'd come in to play cards with my uncle, who had the booth in the front. And they would play cards, I think, rummy or pinochle. I don't know what they're playing. And my uncle was a great guy. He didn't care who the guy was. So he would curse him while they're playing. And this gangster would laugh. He would scream. Let's say the gangster had a better hand than his. He'd throw the hands down. He'd say, you son of a, you know what. And the gangster, who would take no disrespect from anybody, would break into laughter. Why? Because he came in there and let his hair down. He didn't have to walk around with his shell of ego in that place. He could be a regular guy and let the guy he's playing cards with curse him. You follow me? That's part of the story. There's more to it than meets the eye. There's nothing to do with money in that store. There was a scene with a friend's mother. I can't mention it because he was a distant friend. And the mother was, she thought she was very attractive with the Cadillac, you know, from Jamaica States. Apparently, she used to come in there slumming to look for, you know, jewelry, this and that. One day, their eyes clicked. And I think something more clicked after the eyes clicked, we heard. But I lost track of the kid, you know. He had a dynamic male energy, and let's say she had a dynamic female energy, and the rest is not history. 1-800-449-MichaelSavage.com. Sacramento, California. Blair, welcome to the program. You're on the Savage Nation.
Good to talk to you again, Dr. Savage. Right now I'm actually in San Francisco.
Oh,
I gotta get
God,
out of the sweltering heat in Lafayette. Are you drawn?
Oh, yeah. Wait, hold it. Is that not the best weather in the world with that fog and the air and the wind?
I'm looking at Alcatraz right now and a tanker going by. It's beautiful.
You're looking at Alcatraz and you're tanked up right now?
No, I'm looking at a tanker. I'm at North Point Tower and I can see the Golden Gate.
Oh, I thought you were tanked up. What's on your mind?
My point is I'd like you to maybe draw a comparison between the mismanagement of Manhattan and the homelessness. I just was at Burgermeister and walking around North Beach and getting my focaccia bread, and I cannot believe all the homeless people that I'm seeing. That obviously,
the bums in San Francisco. There are more bums in San Francisco than garbage bags, but in New York there are more garbage bags than bums, because apparently the bums in New York all have so much welfare they don't even walk around in the streets anymore. They don't have to beg. The Obama administration just takes care of them.
Oh, my gosh.
No. Look, in seriousness, I don't see garbage bags in San Francisco. New York has a national, international disgrace. People are paying $68 million for a 10,000-square-foot penthouse, and they walk downstairs, and there's garbage bags piled up to their waist. Why is that going on? Why are there garbage bags in the streets of Manhattan, Mayor Bloomberg? I don't understand it. Thank you. Why are there bums in the streets of San Francisco? Why do the liberals flood the streets with bums? Why? They spend hundreds of millions of dollars on so-called homeless services, and yet the bums proliferate. How do you explain that? Not one caller from Manhattan. Is there anyone in Manhattan listening to this show? Where's WOR today? Doug, are there any WOR New York callers or what? There are. What are they doing? They're not listening to me? I went there. I'm talking about the city, and not one person from New York's listening to this show? I have 9 women in New York who listen to me on WOR. Of the 9 to 10 million alleged listeners that I have nationally, 9 of them are women in New York City, and not one of them has the nerve to call me right now. 1-800-449-8255. What's this? In co-op brewery with libs? Romney guts to go. Dogs in Manhattan. Thanks for being our voice. Yeah, why did Obama not go to the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People? Why would he not go there? Romney goes. He goes into the Lions Den, and they boo him. And then the psychotics say, oh, he went there to get booed. You hear? That's what Nancy Pelosi had the nerve to say about Romney. I could not believe it. Shocking. But nothing to me is shocking with the Chicago gang running the country, owning the newspapers. Yeah, that's right. Nothing is shocking to me with this gang. And let me tell you something else. I want to say it to you right now, right up front. You know how I am, like, not that enamored of the Republican Party, and I'm Mr., you know, independent? I got to tell you something. If it wasn't for the few Republicans that we have, we'd be living in a dictatorship. Let me clarify that for you. If it wasn't for the few Republicans with guts that we have in the Senate and in the House, we would be living in an absolute Marxist dictatorship. They are the only thing that stands between us and absolute and total tyranny.
The only thing that stands between total and absolute corrupt power are the few Republicans who stand up to this Chicago gang. I'm going to say that again. Because, you know, very often you can easily interpret me to thinking that, well, there's no one good in politics. That's not true. I mean, there are such good people out there who are fighting the good fight. They're the people who would have fought at the Alamo. They're the people who landed in Normandy. They're the people who fought their way through the jungles of New Guinea. They're the people who bombed Germany into submission. And without them, we'd all be dead. We'd be living in a communist dictatorship. When you think about what I'm about to tell you right now, you'll come to a shocking realization that the Democrats are a criminal enterprise. Let's talk about Congressman Alan West, a certified war hero. Attacked. Why? What a country it's become. Thanks to 100 years of Fabian crypto-Marxist propaganda and the march through the institutions of the communists, that we have a hero soldier named Alan West who was thrown out of the military, forcibly retired. Why? Because he was mean to a genocidal, head-chopping, little girl-raping enemy in order to save the lives of his and our own men, and who was then vilified by the Democrats. By the Democrats, being vilified by the Democrats, whose efforts are being backed by a plutocratic former NSDP collaborator named George Soros, in my humble opinion. How do you feel about a major political party called the Democrats calling a man like Alan West, Colonel Alan West, to you, you vermin, you, a war criminal, while making excuses, you rats from Florida, excuses for 7th century psychopaths? How do you feel about a country like this? I don't feel very good about it, which is why I found out what I've been living through, you'll realize that God's hand must be guiding it all. Because no man could live through what I've been living through for the number of years I've been living through it and do a daily show unless God wanted me to do the show. And so therefore, I'm going to win. I'm going to tell you right now. And when I do, people will be in prison. Tap me. New York, WOR, Jordan, you're on the Savage Nation.
Mike, you're so right on. Manhattan is an absolute cesspool. It is a disgrace to walk around the streets. I'm from this city, like yourself. I'm from Queens. We've talked before. I went to high school in the city, and the real estate market for rentals is a bubble. They are getting exorbitant rents, and the cities are disgustingly overbuilt.
Wait, here's the question I have. When I was a kid, the streets were cleaner. There were garbage men, New York City Sanitation Department garbage men in brown uniforms, and there were cans. You had to put ash cans out with the garbage in it. When did it originate that you could throw garbage in a plastic bag that's like 4 feet, 6 feet wide, 10 feet high? When did this originate? Where's all this garbage coming from?
It's a total debasement. It just reflects what's going on.
Well, wait a minute. How do New Yorkers who think they're so cool, how do they live with this? How does Bloomberg, who bans a soda, put up with garbage bags in the street? How blind could people be who think they're environmentalists, who know everything about climate science, eat 3 feet away from a garbage bag that's festering in the heat?
Biggest hypocrites of all.
That's amazing. That's as simple as that. And the real estate is booming. It's like the king has no clothing. It's unbelievable to me. New York, Michael, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hello. Okay. I want to just say that I think you are the Moses of our time, trying to lead the people out of Egypt from the oppression. I'm a little disappointed that I didn't bump into you yesterday, because I'm in zip code 10021, right near all the hospitals over here. Anyway, I share your contempt for the Democrats who are trying to...
How is it that liberals don't see that they're fascists? How do they not see this?
American hero.
Thank you. I was on 76th Street in Madison. Gorgeous neighborhood. Love the garbage and the jewelry stores. I'll be right back.
Savage.
You know, it's funny. I come on the air today, so what am I talking about? Obama doesn't go to the National Association of Advancing the Colored People. Romney does. I'm talking about politics. And I mentioned the garbage in New York, the bags. You know, if you live there, you probably, it becomes part of the landscape and you don't notice, like a boil on your back that's been there for so long you start to ignore it, or like eczema. But if you go there, I haven't been to New York for at least 18 years, by the way. It's a funny thing. When my mother left, moved to Florida, God rest her soul, I never went back. You know, my publishers are in Manhattan, but we do it by phone, email, whatever. My agent's there. I don't go there. So I went there. It's like I never left. That's number one. A lot of things have not changed at all. Everyone thinks everything changed. The museum, the Metropolitan Museum, is the greatest museum in the world. I mean, I could spend weeks in that museum. Thank God there's no garbage in the museum. Just walking through the Greco-Roman exhibit is enough to, like, put everything in context. Going to my favorite nook and cranny. I mean, I went to the Islamic wing of the museum because I wanted to see a certain room I used to go to as a poor young man for serenity. I used to go to this room in the Islamic wing that was there. I asked the guard, blah, 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 go down there, go. There it was, with the trickling fountain. I was just still blown away by the serenity of this room from a house in Syria from the 1920s in the Islamic art wing. It was amazing to see this. I don't think I just see the bad things. I mean, you know, I'm not that negative. New York, Barry, welcome from WOR. Go ahead, please.
Michael, I'm a longtime fan and listener, but you're way, way, way too critical of this town. This is a great town, Michael. Even with the garbage sometimes that piles up in the street before the collection of people come and pick it up. I mean, you know, if you want to feel alive, you come to New York City. There's no other city on the planet like New York City.
Well, I agree. I just said the Metropolitan Museum is the most beautiful, most phenomenal museum on earth. Don't get me wrong. I'm not all negative about it. But somebody has to wake up Mayor Bloomberg to the garbage problem, don't you think? No, gone. Gone with the wind. So, all right, the New Yorkers are very provincial and they protect it, their hometown.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Start spreading the news. I'm leaving today.
Yep.
I want to be a part of it.
It is true.
New York,
it's true. It is the Savage Nation, just back from a whirlwind 3-day trip to Manhattan, where every Italian restaurant north of 50th Street claims Frank Sinatra ate there every night. Welcome to the program. Every Italian restaurant north of 50th Street claims Frank Sinatra personally ate there every night. Frank, how could he have eaten in all those Italian restaurants to remain so skinny? Can anyone explain that to me? I'd like to know what Frank Sinatra ate. But the fact of the matter is, I spent 3 days there, a little medical thing here and there. I didn't have time to you know, broadcast, but back, told you the story about that. The airplane, the deep pressurization, the prayer. The valve, the pilot, the mask, the B-29, the Romney at the NAACP, the Obama not at the NAACP. We've been covering a lot of waterfront here on the Savage Nation. Who just joined us. We're going to talk about mush, hush, slush, and plush for the VP. There's a little flash on the Drudge Report that some surprise individuals being talked about. You know, who can it be? We know it's not Palin, who I call mush. We know it's not Brewer, who I call hush. We know it's not the unknown woman who I call slush, so it has to be plush who I call Condi Rice. That's my guess. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. If you care to talk about the garbage in Manhattan, this is the number to call. Because I got to ask you something. Why is the city dirtier than when I was a boy? I haven't been there in 18 years. I'm like the guy, I'm like a visitor from another planet. I'm like the brother from another planet who goes to Manhattan and sees things as they really are. Because when you're in a place day in, day out, you grow up there, you live there. So let's say you live in a really great apartment, condo. You don't see the garbage. It becomes part of the background. It's like ignoring the crime, ignoring the garbage. And I want to know why the garbage is in the streets. It stank in these black bags. It was ugly. It was a unsightly mess. To sit in that, why do they sit in Cafe East 69th Street? They're on Madison Avenue having a dinner. Their legs are up, swirling the wine. 1 foot away is 3 feet of garbage. They don't notice the garbage? I don't understand this. How does a city degenerate like this? I got to go back to it because there's an awful lot to be said about garbage and what it tells you about a civilization or the lack thereof. I cannot believe that in ancient Rome they let garbage sit in the streets at night. That's number one. I can't believe that the Athenians would have let garbage sit in the streets of Athens 2,000 years ago. I can't imagine that garbage would have piled up in Jerusalem 5,000 years ago. I can't imagine it. And how does it go on in Manhattan is what I want to know. And I want to know why. I want to know why. Because in my day, there were garbage men. Actual New York City Department of Sanitation workers. They wore brown uniforms. You had trash cans. You had to put your trash in the can. You put them out on a certain night. The trash guys came. They threw it in there. That's when they threw Tippy the dog in the garbage truck. Remember that story? No, it's a sad story. But I remember when my dog died, the one who bit me through to the bone, he died of a heart attack. He was like 9 from eating kitchen scraps. The same wonderful cuisine that put away all the men in that neighborhood. I'm a real survivor. If I survived that diet, what I ate, I told you this. Somebody up there must like my arteries because it doesn't make sense. The dog even died from it. The dog died just from the scraps, the father, everyone died from that diet. The only people who survived were the women who didn't eat it. Symbol shot. But the dog, he dies at age 8. I come down, my mother's crying. He's stiff as a board. The chow bit me through to the bone a few years before. I was glad he was dead. I was afraid to walk around in my own house. Thank God the monster was dead. It was like a lion died in the house. So he was dead. She was crying. She was a nice woman. We didn't know what to do. She didn't know who to call. She calls the garbage man. I swear to God, an hour later, the garbage truck pulls up. Two guys come in with a somber face like out of The Sopranos. Brown uniforms. They nod like a person was dead. Like a sad, like an undertaker face. Okay, you ready, Joe? And the one grabs the front paws. The other grabs the rear legs. And they carry the stiff out. They press the lever, the truck's going, they're rolling, and they throw the dog in. That was the end of it. No pet cemetery, no crying, no tears, no tombstone. No going there every year with like kennel ration cans, balloons, little clownettes, nothing. In the garbage truck and gone. Why? How do I know why? I don't know. Maybe in those days people didn't think about it as much. You know, I love my dog. I don't know, but there must be something in between a pet cemetery and a garbage truck. I don't know what it is yet. 1-800-449-8255. So why is there garbage in Manhattan? And why does Mayor Bloomberg get away with talking about soda, banning soda while garbage is piling up? Can anyone explain it to me how the people are that naive? He talks about we're going to ban soda because it's bad for people, but the garbage bags he doesn't even see. Unbelievable. And if you missed the joke, it's not even funny. But it's a joke nevertheless. For those of you who understand, it's not a joke. The Thompson submachine gun. You know, the one that went rat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat, which was used in gang wars in Chicago in the 30s, was called the Chicago typewriter. So today, of course, they're not shooting each other with machine guns, so they don't call it the typewriter. But they're still shooting each other in the streets of Chicago now that it's under the hands of another fine Democrat, another descendant of the same mentality, running America now on top of the world and instead of just running Chicago. Now they're running the whole country. If it wasn't for the few Republicans who were standing up to them, we'd live in an absolute South American Marxist dictatorship as sure as I'm sitting here. And I want to know why the garbage is there. That's what I want to know. New York, WOR, Vince, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Mikey, I'm surprised that you don't realize what's going on in the city of New York as far as garbage is concerned.
Tell
okay,
me.
Let me explain something to you. You got 60 bags of garbage outside your house. The
yeah.
truck pulls up nice. They're going to take 30 bags, and you're the superintendent in the building. You're saying, hey, what's going on here? Put the 50 in my hand, and the other 30 bags are going to go in the truck. Otherwise,
right.
we'll leave them here until we come two or three days from now. And this is the way it goes on. When there used to be city workers in the city of New York who were garbage men, who were happy to collect a pension and were happy with that, now they've been taken over by friggin' Teamsters.
Wait a minute. So this I didn't know this. So there is no New York City Department of Sanitation anymore. That is correct?
It's the Teamsters, and they got Bloomberg in their back pocket. Come on, man. Don't you see this?
No, I didn't. No, listen to me. I was only there for 3 days. So there is no New York City garbage men anymore. It's all private haulers. You mean the Sopranos, the sanitation Sopranos machine?
And that's that.
That's that.
And that's that.
And that's it. And that's the end of the story. So there's your answer, Mr. Bloomberg. Is that why you're focusing on 32 ounces of soda? Yeah, okay. 1-800-449. The guy, you know, he told you like it is. Like I didn't figure it out. I had to let him figure it out. Because, you know, one man's garbage is another man's what, Beowulf? What'd you say? One man's garbage is another man. As Tony Soprano said, one man's garbage is another man's treasure. Garbage in, garbage, garbage in, garbage out. But look, let's not focus only on the garbage. Let's see what's good about Manhattan. It was so beautiful actually thinking of buying an apartment there in a way with the garbage. Because I'm a people watcher. There's no one to talk to in San Francisco. People are mute. Look, there's a beautiful downtown here. Don't get me wrong. The air is gorgeous. The weather's better. The buildings are great. The people are like zomboids. You can't have a conversation here with a stranger. And I'm like a schmoozer guy. I can walk down the street. I could talk to a Nigerian who's here 3 days who speaks English, broken English. I can get a better human contact with a New York guy from Nigeria in Manhattan than I can with a person who's lived in San Francisco his whole life. I never saw anything like it. I've been out here most of my adult life, and it's like talking to a brick statue. You go up and say anything like a joke. You try to like make a joke. Oh, what are you? They look at you like you're crazy. What are you saying? What's wrong with the people here? I don't understand it. But I came back. I mean, I have a property here. I have all my things are here, and I love being here. The weather's gorgeous. And if I stand here on the side of the bay where my studio is, and I see this incredible bay with the air and the birds, it's almost as dramatic as the Manhattan skyline is in its own way. It's a different kind of phenomenon. It's beautiful. You know, we have a little museum like I love the De Young, and I love the Palace of the Legion of Honor. We have small collections. But when you go into the Metropolitan, forget the tourists, you know, they don't bother me because most of them are upscale. If they're going to a museum, they're already a different class of people already. Okay, they're not going for the 32-ounce soda. Take me out to the Cracker Jack land. God bless you if you like it. So they're French, they're Japanese, whatever, German, and you see a different kind of face walking around the museum. That's number two, because the people in there are part of the thing. But you look at Greco-Roman pieces from thousands of years ago. Here, like an example, they do a sculpting of a very high-caste Roman, possibly not an emperor, but near the level of an emperor, one of his, it was a legion, ahead of a legion. And it's only from his neck to his abdomen and his chest plate. And you could see the side, you know, like the man's chest and all that. It's unbelievable. Or the sculptings of the bodies of the men from Greek or Roman times. It's something to behold. It's incomprehensible what it does to you. There's almost no way to describe it. Or there's another thing. I ought to tell you this. There's a painting, for example. There's a Van Gogh self-portrait that I saw 25 years ago when it was on loan to the museum here in San Francisco. And I wrote about it in my journal that when you stand 3 inches away from this Van Gogh, which has no glass on it, and you stare at it, and you could feel the oil, the brushstrokes of Van Gogh, you know, you can feel a man's madness. You can feel his genius. You can feel it coming from the canvas into your eyes. And what's amazing is, you know, there's no glass. The guards aren't afraid that you're going to slash it like you're an occupier. You know what I'm saying? You're not a Democrat. The guy figures, I'm not a Democrat who's going to slash a painting. So he didn't like come over like a paranoid lunatic. Here in San Francisco, if you go near a painting, even with glass, they want to pull a gun on you. I never saw anything like it. They're like crazy. The whole thing's nuts here. But if you stand next to the Van Gogh self-portrait in the Metropolitan, it's something beyond description. There's no words for it. And then there's like the Islamic room from the 1920s, Damascus, the Serenity. I remember I used to go in there as a poor young man with the stained raincoat with the tuna fish sandwich that I would take as I rode the subway into work. And I'd go into that museum. It was like a break. I felt like a wealthy man. See, that's the thing. Let me conclude it with something that's well known but hasn't been said often enough. You could be a poor man in Manhattan, and you're a very rich man if you actually dip into the culture that's there, right? And you could be a very wealthy man in other parts of the world and be very impoverished because there's nothing there to feed your soul. Okay? It's a truism, and I'll be back.
Savage.
Hey, what are you talking about garbage for? The Scongeli Hauling Company does a great job in Manhattan. You don't like the bags? That's your problem. Don't be talking about no garbage. The Scongeli Hauling Company does a good job. That's all you got to know. The mayor talks about soda for a reason. We tell him what to talk about.
1-800-449-8255. Hey, did you see this last week while I was away, working my way back and forth across the nation? I don't travel at all. I don't like it, but this came out. I could not believe this. I'm number two in the world in terms of the most listened to host on the internet and on mobile devices. No, really, it's amazing. So these are the most listened to talk show hosts in the world. All data collected to produce this report came from our server via the TalkStream Live website, Showstopper, the list, Impulse Gadgets, and mobile iPhone app. So they go through the top 50 in the world, and they say Michael Savage is number two in the world. The Power 50, the 50 most influential talk show hosts on the internet. Number one, Limbaugh. Number two, Michael Savage. I mean, this is an amazing story unto itself that's worth discussing at length at another time. If I'm number two in the world, right, and Wallbanger Hannity is number seven, and Fox News never, ever has me on, ABC, CBS, NBC won't even refer to me. I mean, what's going on in this world? There's something going on here. This is an amazing story. So I have a large listenership of younger people who listen to me on mobile devices is what it comes down to. I think my listenership is much bigger, by the way, than reported in Talkers magazine. Because let's say I'm number three in Talkers, right? I'm in terrestrial radio, regular stations, towers, hello, this is Walter Winchell kind of thing. But now you got the fact that I'm number two in the world, including internet, you know, handheld devices. It means the younger people who use them are listening to me. Power 50 includes the big personalities talk show fans would expect, as well as some new media rising stars. It's pretty amazing that I've survived this long as a talk show host, I should add, and that the listenership is so great. Your hair's going to stand up. I haven't even begun to dip into the some of the stories that I wanted to get to, but I think it's just as interesting to talk about the Chicago typewriter, the Thompson submachine gun, as it was called. Who's going to run as the VP candidate with the Romney? Is it going to be Mush? No. Hush? No. Slush? No. Might be Plush? Yes. Condi Rice, I think. It'll be a Romney-Rice ticket, which I'm not so sure is such a big deal. I thought she was a lackluster Secretary of State, personally. I mean, we know what he's doing there. Woman minority, okay. It won't grab one minority vote. Not one. See, that's the mistake. He would have been better off picking a conservative VP candidate, but God forbid they should listen to me. God forbid they should actually listen to me. They already got the Republican vote. Obama's already got the Democrat vote, right? So what's up for grabs? The battleground states and the independent voter. So why would an independent voter care about a retread like Condi Rice? Why? Why? Well, who's making this kind of decision for this guy? It doesn't make sense. This is amateurville. I mean, Trump said the same thing I'm saying. He's got to get rid of this team of schmucks who are the same schmendricks who've been with him since Massachusetts. These are lifers who belong working in a bureaucracy. They have no idea what the actual world is like outside their own world. I do. And I'm telling you, this is not a hot ticket. He's got to pick a hardcore conservative who speaks the lingo of the guy who's not even going to come out and vote unless he picks somebody who stands for borders, language, and culture and says it. That's what he needs. He needs hardcore, scintillating machine gun VP candidate who speaks about patriotism and nationalism and means it. Somebody who stands up for the American flag, the American way, and the American family. Okay? There is nobody, right?
Savage.
How do you explain that they survey 1.2 million people? Now, this is a look, I'm an epidemiologist by training. This is a big sample. You know, you sample 15 people, it means nothing. You want to put out a false study, you sample 30 people, right, and come up with some fake conclusion that this is a carcinogen or people want to vote for Obama. You have a sample of 1.2 million people. They sample 1.2 million listeners during the first 6 months of 2012. They produce the Power 50 reporter, the 50 most influential talk show hosts on the internet and on mobile devices, and I'm number two. How is that possible? If I'm ignored, I don't exist. Michael Savage is nobody, blah, blah, blah. I'm number two. How is this possible? Rush is number one, as you'd expect, not because he's so intelligent, but because he's got the biggest outlet. He's got the best distribution. If you have a bad drink and you're on every shelf in the country, you're bound to be number one for a long while. But I have almost no distribution in some places, and I'm still number two on the internet. It's unbelievable. And here's guys who think they're such big shots, like Mark Groucho, Sean Wallbanger, number six and seven. Mark Groucho, Sean Wallbanger. O'Reilly isn't here because he failed in radio, so he's gone. Of course I'm going to be happy with the results. I didn't get here by accident, nor do I stay here by accident. I want to thank them for this study. Rush. The guy was number two. So, will it be mush, hush, slush, or plush on the Savage Nation? Well, we can talk about garbage in New York, which is, again, I'm like the guy from another planet who goes there and sees garbage. No one else sees it. Some funny things happen. You know, I told you I went there for a medical, but still I had time to go around down to the streets where my dad had a store. The same garbage. It still smelled. It was still a slum. But the hipsters didn't know that. All the girls and the guys with the cigarettes, they're cool. Everyone's cool. Sitting in the bars at midnight, looking, you know, like beatniks. Like they were, like life is too heavy for them, you know, swirling the cheap wine. Was no different than the Bowery when I was a kid. Only in the Bowery, they drank it in the gutter. Now they're swirling. Well, I don't know what they pay for rent up there. $10,000, $8,000, $6,000, $5,000 for a tenement. A garbage tenement. The guy that my uncle played pinochle with, I guarantee you, would be glad if he still owned the apartments today. He's dead. He's long dead in the ground. Mort, dead, finished, gone. Like a mortadella you threw in the bay. Finished. That's what happens. It's it. You know, in the peak of your life, you're 45, 50, you think that you're indestructible. You're going to live forever. You go to a museum like the Metropolitan, you see a tomb of an emperor or a statue of a guy who lived thousands of years ago, who is, of course, not even Adam. He's dust now. What is that? Humbles you. See, great art is like religion. That's the point I'm trying to make. I'm fundamentally a spiritual man, not a religious man. But great art to me is very spiritual in the sense that it humbles you in that you understand that you're finite, number one, and that you shouldn't be too proud because at the end of it all, what are you? So the guy who's 50, 45 in the prime of his life, full of energy, laughs at the other guy, you know, abuses people, robs them, whatever. Now get back to me when he's like whatever age, whenever it hits, and there he is abandoned in the nursing home by the family. Can't move, in the chair, in the corner, next to the curtain, drooling on himself, staring at a curtain, and he's beaten about the head and neck for the change that his children leave him when they visit him once a month by the third worlder who they hire in the nursing home, and that's the end of his life, even though at one point he was this big, powerful guy in the Mercedes on East 76th Street going into the restaurant that Sinatra ate in. Not a bad run. Not a bad run. I could still do it. That's why I'm listened to. I got to do this once in a while. Get it out of my system. Let me tell you a funny hat story in Manhattan. It's a funny side story. It might be funny if you understand the mores of the streets of Manhattan, which apparently I forgot because I've been gone so long, I'm like a rube. So I go out to dinner one of the nights with my agent and a couple of publishers. It was a nice dinner in some uptown restaurant. I didn't care for the food, honestly. I'm not into these long, you know, but it was jammed. I'm talking about 500 people packed. I don't know whether it was a restaurant that Sinatra ate in. The place I wanted to get into, this is a funny story, a secondary story. There was only one Italian restaurant I wanted to eat in, which nobody can get into. Even the owner can't get into it. It's so small. It's in the, you know, like 100 and whatever, 20th Street. Everybody, every entertainer, every wise guy thing, everybody wants to eat there. I got their cookbook. I used their sauce. I wanted to go there. So this publisher publishes their cookbook and couldn't get in. And the owner says, I'm a fan of Michael Savage, but he couldn't give me a table. Can you believe this? That was the only Italian restaurant I wanted to eat in. I couldn't get in. So I went where he wanted to go, whatever. So we're eating, hundreds of people, everyone. You know, Manhattan restaurants are great in the sense if you like the buzz and the crowd and people looking, whatever. I couldn't take it every night. Truthfully, I'd rather get a chicken from Safeway most nights and talk to my dog and watch the news and go on a bike ride and look at a seagull. But, okay, you go to the restaurant, jam, da-da, the meal, till it came, you could faint. And it's such a fancy Italian restaurant that they don't even serve bread. Now you understand how expensive it's going to be. There's not a piece of bread on the table. Not even. And this was so expensive, there wasn't even a breadstick. See, the more expensive, the less food, of course. And it's so déclassé to have bread, they don't have it. And even a breadstick is a mark of a cheap Italian restaurant. The real death knell is a meatball, which is the only thing I wanted to eat, but they didn't have. So I ordered something I didn't want, and I ate it. And my fingers were like, the hands didn't work in the bed at night. I couldn't move the wrist or the hand. I suspect either it was a high salt content or some dipping thing that they did in the kitchen or some extracted sauce that some schmendrick came up with from a cooking school who must add 600 grams of salt, you know, per milliliter. Nevertheless, I'm dressed, you know, my normal way. I just, okay, I'm not going to dress like a schmuck in a restaurant. I'll tell you exactly what I wore. It's an outfit I like. I wore a black velour jacket, which I love because wherever I go, no matter where I am, it looks good. It's like a retro. Everyone thinks it's retro, but then the guys look at you and say, God, I wish I had one. You know what I mean? I bought it a few years ago, but it was a big thing from the 70s. This was a new one. So I wear it at night wherever I go. Florida, here, everyone loves it. Women love this jacket, black velour. And I have a striped, like, plum purple shirt with a purple tie. Very cool, nice pants, dark pants, whatever. And I have a hat, which you've seen on the cover of Psychological Nudity, if you bought that book. It's a gray Gucci hat. Like a little hat, small hat. I don't wear it for effect. I think it's a beautiful hat, and I wear it particularly when it is sun out. I don't want sun on my head, but I don't want to wear a goofy hat. I don't want to wear a cowboy hat. I don't want to wear a cowboy hat and look like Midnight Cowboy. I don't want to wear a big hat or a dumb hat or a liberal hat or, you know, a floppy hat. So it's like a kind of like nice singer's hat. So, okay, wear it in the street. That's okay. I go in the restaurant, and I had it on my head. Even though it was nighttime, sun was still out. The burning sun, I had it on. Go in, sit down, eat the meal. It's 2 hours later. As I'm leaving, I forgot to add the hat. I put it on my head. As I'm walking out, I didn't even realize I had my hat on until four guys who were right out of The Sopranos start pointing at me and mocking me and laughing. Like, who's that schmuck with the hat on? Who's he think he is? I saw it in 2 seconds because I grew up in New York. It was like being in high school again, you know, with the bullies. I didn't give a damn. I'm so disconnected from social interaction and from caring about who says what that I didn't even get offended by it. Thank God I didn't. I would have wound up in the back of a garbage truck. I didn't even get offended. I looked at them and pointed and said, thank you. That's all I said as we walked out of the restaurant. Then I realized they were mocking my hat because I was wearing a hat like I was a big shot or I was trying to be cool. And they were right in the way. Who wears a hat in a restaurant? But the point is, it was a funny side story of a hat. Now, where was I before the hat story, Beowulf? I got distracted on the hat. Oh, that's the whole hat story? That was the whole hat story. Now you know why I'm number two in the internet and radio. Why? Because you want me to sit here and bash Obama? How much can I do? I wrote Trickle Up Poverty. It sold almost 300,000 in hardcover. I wrote Trickle Down Tyranny. Okay? Many of you bought it. Many of you are too cheap or too ignorant to buy it. Many of you are too, let us say, stingy to buy a copy for your liberal friend. You complain about him, but you don't buy him the one book that you need to buy in order for them to go and make up their mind about the criminality that's going on in the country. I can't help that. So I'm not going to spend every day talking about Obama. The man is a disaster. If he wasn't controlled by the few Republicans with the guts to stand up to him, we'd be living in a Marxist dictatorship. If we don't stand up to him and get rid of this guy and put in this lackluster middle-of-the-road Republican who at least will bring us back to a middle road, we're finished. There's no coming back from it. That's my estimation. And I'm not the only one who says this. You know what I'm saying? And if you look, you don't have to look any further than what this illegitimate, evil, anti-American Democrat Party does to Alan West. Here's a guy, do I have to say to you he's African-American or black? He's black guy. a lifetime military guy, lieutenant colonel. His father was in the military. His uncle was in the military. He's as good an American as you're ever going to find, a hero, right? Now, thanks to 100 years of Fabian socialism and the Gramscian method of marching through the institutions, particularly the colleges where they're brainwashed, here we have a hero soldier, Alan West, who was forcibly retired. Why? Because he was mean to a genocidal, head-shopping, little girl-raping enemy in order to save the life of his men. And then you have a Democrat Party, Democrats, who vilify Alan West. And you have a Democrat Party backed by a plutocrat who allegedly was a former NSDP collaborator in World War II, poses as a Holocaust victim. And if you say one word about this NSDP collaborator, they call you an anti-Semite. That's the country that we're living in. That is the country that we're living in. That a major political party like the Democrats can feel comfortable calling Alan West a certifiable great American hero, a war criminal, while catering to the 7th century psychopaths at Guantanamo Bay Daycare Center tells me everything I need to know about never, ever voting for one of these dog catchers called Democrats again. And that leads me right back to the garbage of Manhattan. Garbage in, garbage out. Why is Obama not spending a nickel campaigning in New York? He doesn't have to. Because these self-righteous idiots who think that they're brilliant in every way, who don't know anything about what's going on right under their noses, are going to vote for him no matter what. No matter what, if their pictures were published of Obama doing the most vile thing, they would say, so what, they all do it. I'm not going to vote for that guy. You're going to vote for that guy, Romney, that Mormon? No, I don't want a bigot like a Mormon in there. See what I just said? You catch that line? I don't want a bigot like a Mormon in there in the White House. Catch that line? You understand that line? You understand the paradox of that line? The mock woman I'm making up. I don't want a bigot like that Mormon in the White House. Get it? Understand it? Well, you better understand it. You're dealing with brainwashed idiots like the one with the fake hyphenated name in Florida, whatever her name is, mishyphenated woman who hates Alan West. She couldn't shine that guy's shoes. That's how great he is and that's how low she is. And yet she's a politician in America in the year 2012. So don't get me started on my contempt for what these Democrat Marxist socialists have done, are doing, and will do unless they're stopped in their tracks. Now you know why I'm number two in the world on the internet and radio. And I'm listened to around the world. I'll be right back.
Savage.
All right, so here's the big story. It just hit Drudge. It's Condoleezza Rice emerging as the front runner for VP. And as I say, okay, you know, it's a retread. We had the Buick already. She was the Buick of the Bush administration. You know, we drove in that car already. Yeah, it's as good a choice as you're going to get out of Romney. Okay, here he is, you know, elite white guy, and first African-American. He'll get like 12 African-Americans who were going to vote for Obama who move over, 12 women who are not sure and will move. He got 24 new votes as a result of this. I'm nothing against her, but like, what is she? What does she stand for? I can't wait for the ad nauseum of Ann Romney leaning over to welcome her to the, you know, all white girl sorority club. Hello. Oh, yes. We're just so open. Yes, come into a sorority. Welcome. It's fine. Romney narrows VP choice as Condi emerges as front runner. I'm thinking out loud. This is what I do for a living. Pardon me if I don't sound like a broadcaster. I'm giving it to you, you know, as it comes out of my head. Sometimes it's shock. Sometimes it's saddened. Sometimes it's humorous. Sometimes it's stupid. This is it. It's naked. It's raw. It's the Savage Nation. I'm not enamored of it. It's as good a choice as any as you're going to get out of Romney to begin with. Romney Rice. Yay. Okay. I'm going to vote for them. Anything to stop the Marxist dictatorship and taxes through the roof and garbage piling up 50 feet high. If you think 3 feet of garbage in Manhattan is bad now, wait until you see what happens when the unions take over the world if, God forbid, the dictator should win a second term. New York, WORGM, fire away. You've got it.
Hi, Dr. Savage. That restaurant you were talking about, the Italian restaurant uptown?
Yes.
I think it's called Feo's, and it's about 116th Street. And
you got it. You got it. You got it. But they didn't let me in, so don't even mention their name.
Yeah, okay. So I went up there about a year ago. Anyway, I knew some fellows that graduated Jamaica High School, you were talking about, in 1954, 1955.
All right, so what's the main point, Jim? Let's not do a nostalgia job.
Oh, okay. I don't think New York changed that. I changed a lot, but there's still areas in New York that's still old-fashioned. I come from the 40s.
All right, thank you very much. It hasn't changed in some regard. It's dirtier. That's all. With all the progress and all the liberals and all of the concern with the environment, it's filthier than when I was a boy. How's that? Write it down. Let me repeat it in case you missed it. With all of the 50 years of brainwashing about the environment and the ecology and global warming, and we got to clean up the environment and ban soda and ban cigarettes and ban fat and ban popcorn and ban salt, Mayor Bloomberg lets the garbage pile up 4 feet high in the streets of Manhattan. How does that work? I went down there. I went around. Even on the Upper East Side, there's trash bags. But no one sees that. They walk around it. Is it like this in Paris? Is it like this in all of the West? Is this a mark of the decaying Western civilization, the garbage bags? Is that the metaphor? Well, if I were an artist, and I'm not going to give it away. I'm a verbal artist. But let's say I was a physical artist. And I had the ability to sleep with the head of the Metropolitan Museum, whoever it might be, if I had wanted to, in order to get my exhibit in a corner of the exhibit, because that's how it's done now in a decaying civilization. Because in San Francisco, it's so bad they had a woman's shoes in a display, which I wrote about once. Her shoes and clothes. They made an entire exhibit about it. So let's say I'm a modern artist and I slept my way up to the top and I knew the head of the Met and I wanted to get in the museum. My exhibit would be a bag of garbage. Manhattan. The year 2012, a bag of garbage with garbage in it. And then the schmuck liberals would come, oh, wow, look at that. How cool. How much is that bag of garbage? Can I pay $13 million? I'll pay $15 million. I'll top you. I'll pay $20 million for that garbage as it leaks out onto the museum floor. $25 million. Do I hear more? I hear $30 million in that bag of garbage. Do I hear $31 million? Do I hear $32 million for the bag of garbage from George Soros? Sold to George Soros, $32 million for a bag of garbage for his estate out in Long Island. That's what would happen. That's what would happen. That's the mark of the liberal brain. That's the New York Times. Exhibit of garbage in museums seen to be a harbinger of civilization in decline, says the New York Times. Greek far right hangs a target on immigrants. That was the headline yesterday. Greek far right hangs a target on immigrants. The Pakistani Muslims are running all over Athens and destroying Greece. So you got boys of the type, the descendants who stood up to the Persians, who were glorified in the movie 300 when the Greeks greatly outnumbered, right, beat the Persian army. So now you got Greek guys who've had enough of the overrun of the Muslims, the illegal aliens in Greece. New York Times, which side did they take? The same New York Times that loved the movie 300. Oh, wonderful piece of art, blah, blah, blah. The Greeks were shown great warriors on the... Now you got guys who are willing to stand up to the hordes who are there illegally, and they're calling them Nazis, right-wingers, picking on poor immigrants. They're tired of having their sister mugged and raped in the gutter of Greece. They're tired of the filth. They're tired of the people selling trinkets outside the Parthenon and not paying taxes. Okay? So don't tell me about liberal bias. I can see it wherever I turn. They're Neanderthals posing as progressives. Why do liberals hate nationalists? Why do liberals hate people who love their country? Why do they hate people who want to protect their borders, language, and culture? Why are they so bigoted towards Mormons and so in love with Muslims? Can anyone answer that question? Why do they vilify a war hero like Alan West and support anti-American, drug-taking scum in the Democrat Party? Answer that question and you win nothing.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Boy, do we have audio for this show today. You can't believe some of the audio we have today in the Savage Nation. Listen, I've been saying for months now that Romney must toughen up.
I'm Mitt Romney, and I approve this message.
When a president doesn't tell the truth, how can we trust him to lead? The Obama outsourcing attacks, misleading, unfair, and untrue. There was no evidence that Mitt Romney shipped jobs overseas. Candidate Obama lied about Hillary Clinton.
So shame on you, Barack Obama.
But America expects more from a president. Obama's dishonest campaign, another reason America has lost confidence in Barack Obama.
Listen to some of this speech to the NAACP.
Now, I want you to know that if I did not believe that my policies and my leadership would help families of color and families of any color more than the policies and leadership of President Obama, I wouldn't be running for president. Now, of course, you know the opposition charges that I and people in my party are running for office to help the rich. Nonsense. The rich will do just fine whether I'm elected or not. The president wants to make this campaign about blaming the rich, and I want to make this a campaign about helping the middle class in America. We have to stop spending over $1 trillion more than we take in every year. And so to do that, I'm going to eliminate every non-essential, expensive program I can find. That includes Obamacare, and I'm going to work to reform and save.
Here is Biden pandering as usual.
When his father was a candidate for president in 1968, his father released 12 years of tax returns because he said, and I quote, "One year could be a fluke. Perhaps done for show," end of quote. That was his father. His son has released only 1 year of his tax returns, making alive the old adage, like father, like son. He wants you to show your papers, but he won't show us his.
Now Biden, of all people, is quoting scripture. Character?
The best way to sum up the president's view, my view, and I think your view, is we see America where, in the words of the scripture, what you do unto the least of my brethren, you do unto me. As President Barack Obama says, we are our brother's keeper. We are our sister's keeper. We have an obligation. And as at the outset, as I said, I believe this election will come down to character, conviction, and vision. And it will not surprise you, I don't think it's even a close call.
Here's Willie Brown, the distinguished Willie Brown, giving us his opinions on distinguished behavior.
He did not speak to the working class people who were in that room. He spoke beyond them. He spoke to the normal Republican base he's attempting to motivate. And he needed the business of the booze to reinsure that he is, in fact, the guy that they can trust not to do anything that anybody in that room would want him to do. He could have very easily taken the high road. He could have proceeded to have said things that the Obama administration will not say about issues affecting the lives of black people. He could have shown clearly how he intends to extend the opportunity. And he could have commenced by saying, I'm sorry, the president isn't here.
James Earl Jones, go back to faking it in the movies.
I think I figured out the Tea Party. I think I do understand racism because I was taught to be one by my grandmother. My grandmother was part Cherokee Choctaw Indian, part black. She hated everybody. Mm. She taught all of her children and grandchildren to be racist, to hate white people, and to distrust black people.
Here is how Obama feels about his comrade, Chavez, the dictator.
We're always concerned about Iran engaging in destabilizing activity around the globe. But overall, my sense is that what Mr. Chavez has done over the last several years has not had a serious national security impact on us.
And now he's telling the Catholic Church what's fair.
What can you say about a health care bill that'll mandate insurance companies to provide birth control, sterilization, etc. to employees of Catholic universities, hospitals, and churches, since this goes against the Catholic religion? We know there is compromise language in place. Mm-hmm. Some say it doesn't go far enough, and that the much bigger issue is religious liberty, not contraception.
Yeah. Well, it's absolutely true that religious liberty is critical. I mean, that's what our country was founded on. That's the reason why we exempted churches, we exempted religious institutions, but we did say that big Catholic hospitals or universities who employ a lot of non-Catholics and who receive a lot of federal money, that for them to be in a position to say to a woman who works there, you can't get that from your insurance company, even though the institution isn't paying for it, crosses the line where that woman, she suddenly is going to have to bear the burden and the cost of that. And that's not fair.
And finally, Michelle Obama says they have to find unregistered voters and shake them.
He needs you to keep doing what you're doing. He needs you to keep making those calls, doing that hard work, knocking on those doors. Treacherous work, right? Tiring work. He needs you to keep registering those voters. You know, the ones, you know, that aren't registered, you got to get them and shake them. Find them. Get them registered. And even more importantly, he needs you to multiply yourselves. You know, think about it like that. Multiply yourselves.
Reach out to thousands? You mean the illegals and people who have been dead for years?
Reach out to everybody you know, your friends, family, neighbors, and tell them to go to BarackObama.com. Find out how they can roll up their sleeves and get involved. And let me just say that if anyone in here has any doubt about the difference that you can make, I just want you to remember that in the end, this election could all come down to those last few thousand people that we register to vote. Think about it like that.
And here are all the stories that made it up to the only website in the world that I read other than the others, and that is michaelsavage.com, home of the Savage Nation, where borders, language, and culture reigns supreme. The fact of the matter is, trickle-down tyranny is more important today than it was when it was published a few months ago. It's the only book you need to understand who to vote for. It's the only book you need to convince others who to vote for. Buy Trickle-Down Tyranny now in a local bookstore. Top right, Reid wants to burn China-made Olympic uniforms. Penn State disregarded children's welfare. No kidding. Obama won't speak at NAACP due to a scheduling conflict. That was yesterday. Apparently he won't even speak there, but Romney did. Obamacare, well, say goodbye to superior doctors. You're going to get third world doctors and inexperienced medical practitioners. That's what you wanted, isn't it? Alan West, an American hero, is being targeted by a new Soros-backed super PAC. What a country we live in. What a country we live in. What a strange country it is that we live in. Thanks to a century of Fabian crypto-Marxist socialism and the march through the institutions of the socialists, we have a heroic soldier like Alan West who was forcibly retired for being mean to a genocidal head-chopping enemy in order to save the lives of his own troops and being vilified by the Democrats, whose efforts are being backed by a plutocrat, former supporter of the NSDP in Nazi Germany. How do you feel about a country when a lot of supporters of a major political party like the Democrats feel comfortable calling a hero like West a war criminal while making excuses for all manner of 7th century psychopathy and protesting the existence of the Guantanamo Bay Daycare Center? You think some screws have come loose? All this right on michaelsavage.com. Let's go to the bottom of the page. Adulterers slaughtered in Afghanistan by the practitioners of the religion of peace. Satellite shows Asian glaciers are gaining new ice. That's right. Disproving the doom-laden predictions of some climate change liars. Let me repeat it. Asian glaciers gaining new ice. Liars, all of them. There's so much more on this website. This is on my website. You're not going to believe this. Democratic Chair Schultz invested in Swiss banks. She attacks Romney for having a Swiss account in that lying SOB. Invested in Swiss banks. Look at those psychotic eyes. Wall Street Journal says off the tax cliff he goes. Obama wants lower rates for GE and JP Morgan than for small businesses. All this and more right here on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
So what's in the news? Well, what's in the news is good, it's bad, it's whatever, your side you're on, whatever. Economy is stalling, dismal jobs, minorities take the biggest hit, private sector down, and Obama's doing great. Why? Because Romney's flummoxed, doesn't know what to say. George Zimmerman leaves jail on $1 million bond. They can't wait to see him crucified for defending himself, but they had to give him bail. You know what I love? Is all the liberals were screaming, how dare they give the man bail? All of the minorities and all of the ACLUers who are always in favor of bail for mass murderers, rapists, terrorists. Suddenly Zimmerman got bail. They were going crazy. How dare the judge give him bail? I'm shocked that they're letting him out of jail. He's a danger to himself and to others. Bush and wife Laura in Zambia promoting cancer initiative. Oh, it's like a safe place to be during a campaign. I love these headlines. Seven arrested in British anti-terrorism raid. Seven men. Seven Hasidic rabbis, seven nuns, seven flying Catholic nuns. No, seven men. The word Muslim is not allowed. Islam is not allowed to be tied to terrorism anymore. Nancy Reagan turns 91, gets Disney serenade. What else is in the news? Well, everything, yeah. Brad Pitt's mom blasts Obama, urges vote for Romney. She did the right thing. Of course, you know what's going to happen once Spielberg, Hielberg, Katzenberg, Matzenberg, Ratzenberg, and Hatzenberg come back from Malta, wherever they are, with Judge Roberts. My guess is Judge Roberts is on the island of Malta, but someone's yacht, someone's 300-foot yacht from Hollywood will be picking him up in Malta to give him a celebratory ride for having done the right thing for worldwide socialism. So here we are. Yeah, it's the best of times, worst of times. What else is in the news? Top Syrian general's defection encourages anti-Assad coalition. I'm supposed to cheer now that the Islamists are going to take over Syria. It's not bad enough they've taken over Libya through Egypt. Now I should cheer that they knock out Assad, who's a murderous, horrendous dictator. But you haven't seen anything yet. You haven't seen anything yet when the Islamists gain control of the entire Arab world. Wait. Wait until you see what your friends in the Obama administration achieve. What else? Pinocchio's getting away with it because Romney, the thing we were talking about in the last hour was Romney spoke and got cut off by his wife on a 60 Minutes interview. He will not go anywhere near a conservative. Anyone who speaks conservatism, he doesn't want to know. But if you're a liberal, oh, he runs to you. So he goes on a CBS show in clip 5 and his wife cuts him off. Listen.
The president's going on a bus tour. He's got no new answers. All he's saying is, let's go government some more.
Well, I feel like all he's doing is saying, let's kill this guy. And I feel like that's not really a very good campaign policy.
So we've been arguing over my statement, which is meant as a criticism, not as an attack on Romney, which is your wife is not making you look good. And I've asked, is Ann Romney doing more harm than good? And I think it's a very fair question. I think I believe she's taking too prominent a role. Every time she gets tough, he looks weaker. When he's already seen as a wimp and as a milquetoast. And the last thing he needs now is a wife stepping on his words. That's how I see it. I'm sorry. I think she's a smart woman. There's no question in my mind that today a marriage the partnership of marriage means that there's no such thing as a man alone or a woman alone. It's a partnership. However, the partnership's not running for office. You'll notice who has disappeared into the background. You'll notice that the communist in chief's wife, Michelle, the controversial Michelle, is not even giving vegetable cooking advice.
Have you noticed that she, as smart as she is, as blunt as she is, as outspoken as she is, have you noticed that Obama's brain has told her to sort of step away from the spotlight? Your husband's running, not you. You're not really that loved, number one. No matter what the people in the media may put out, Michelle Obama is not loved that much, by the way. The majority of American people are offended by many of her comments, which they've never forgotten, which I don't have to remind you of. So she's smart enough, and so is the team, to keep her in the background. I can never imagine Barack Obama and Michelle Obama giving an interview, let us say on Fox News, right? And in the middle of it, Obama's a little meek in what he's saying, and she would step on his words and say, what he means is this, and he would dummy up. I don't think that would happen. They got their act together. So look, this is serious business here. Because you know what's at stake. I don't have to repeat it again. 1-800-449-8255. Is Mrs. Romney doing more harm than good? Or if you'd like some open mic to my questions, lifestyle questions, how to raise pigeons. Well, don't call me on that. I never raise pigeons. I've avoided birds all my life because of psittacosis and other related issue. Let's take the callers on the show because I think people got some great calls here. Let's begin in Austin, Texas, the land of the psychosis. The land, you know, if you have to say there's liberal psychosis in Texas, it's limited to Austin, Texas. Bill, welcome to the program.
Dr. Savage, last half hour you were talking about how you can broadcast with your ISD headlines from, you know, just about anywhere now, and that you have Teddy with you all the time. And myself, I'm an old broadcaster too, and I have a little dog called a Brussels Griffon. Don't know if you've ever heard of that one or not.
No, they're lovely. So what's the question?
But what happens is, when it goes to the window, it barks all the time. And with Teddy, I never hear any barking. How did you train him to be so quiet?
This dog is 8 years old. He's been with me from day one. He's an amazing dog. Think of the RCA Victor dog.
Savage.
Corrupt state of California just approved funding for a train to nowhere. That's right. Governor Moonbeam with his Democrat cronies just approved billions of dollars to construct a train to nowhere. A train to nowhere that will cost at least $68 billion. That's what they say today. That means it'll be $300 billion by the time it's over. This bill was pushed by unions and their governor, their personal governor, Jerry Brown, and Demon Cat leaders and so-called labor groups. They can now begin selling $2.6 billion in bonds to build an initial 130-mile stretch in the Central Valley that will service absolutely nobody. Nobody will use this rail line for years, if ever. The fact of the matter is, the state is broken. To call this a boondoggle is being too polite to the situation itself. This is not an infrastructure project that will ever be used. It will simply generate make work jobs. And of course, this is a result of the corrupt state of California, the corrupt broken state of California, the corrupt union dominated state of California that is now finally putting the final nail in the coffin of the state of California. It is a colossal fiscal train wreck for the state of California. Nobody will use this. In 100 years, they'll look back upon this. It will be known as Brown's folly. California okayed funding for a high-speed rail line that most voters have rejected, Democrat and Republican alike. We go back to regular programming now on the Savage Nation. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. Any topic is fair game. The number one topic today is Ann Romney interrupting Mitt Romney during an interview, and I'm saying or asking, is she doing more harm than good? And I'm saying, is it time for her to get out of the picture and let him take the reins and start fighting back? Now, by comparison, do we have the soundbite of Chris Christie from the other day? Right, play that for a minute. Here's Chris Christie of New Jersey. Let's
hear it. Addressing the legislature?
Did I say on topic? Are you stupid? On topic. Thank you all very much, and I'm sorry for the idiot over there. Take care.
Good for you. Chris Christie, by the way, could be elected president for the reasons that I'm telling. First of all, the man's smart. He's got guts. He's willing to take on the idiots in the media. He's willing to take on the demon cats, the socialists, and the other creeps who have destroyed America. So now they're screaming because he took on some guy on the boardwalk in New Jersey who tried to razz him while he was buying an ice cream cone. and he started to saying, what are you, stupid? You're a big shot. See, this is exactly what's missing in Mitt Romney. Nice guys don't finish last. They don't finish at all. That's the reality of it. And I can tell you right now, if they dumped Romney and put in Chris Christie at the Republican convention, the conservative Republicans would the Republicans would win by 20 points. This country is not sure about Obama. Look, the diehards are, the unionists are, the grifters are, those who own the sporting goods store who are seeing the things going out the back door love Obama. But there's a large swath of Americans who don't like him or are, let's say, leery of him, or they're out of work, and they want a plain-spoken, strong guy like Chris Christie. And that's why Chris Christie will never be selected for the VP slot by Mitt Romney, precisely for the reasons I just mentioned. Never in a million years. He's exactly the tonic that America needs. He's exactly the man who could beat Obama. He's exactly the man who could save us from this juggernaut of left-wing fanaticism. And that's exactly why the Republicrats will never pick him. New York, WORN, welcome to the Savage Nation. Topic, please.
Yes, hello. I wanted to say that you made a comment about timing. As far as, you know, if the timing is off, then it's no longer funny. I think that Mitt Romney is biding his timing. I would like for us to remember how he came across when a lot of people criticized him when he made his comment about the ruling of Roberts. But we need to remember that somebody as ruthless as Obama and the ruthless vermin of the Ratwallers that uphold him were just waiting and dying for Mitt Romney to also dishonor the court the same way that Obama dishonored the court. And very quickly on Mitt Romney's wife, I hope that she does not make it a habit, but in this particular incident, she defended him on something that had he done it himself, he would have looked like a crybaby and boastful. And she spoke after he made his point that Obama was trying to grow a government. But I do hope, like you...
It's very interesting what you're saying. No, I've heard every word you said, and you make good sense. So let's do this. Let's play the clip five again. And I'm going to ask the audience all over again, do you think Ann Romney is doing more harm than good by taking too prominent a role in the campaign? Let's listen.
The president's going on a bus tour. He's got no new answers. All he's saying is, let's go government some more.
Well, I feel like all he's doing is saying, let's kill this guy. Well, and I feel like that's not really a very good campaign policy.
Wimpy dimpy. Mr. Rogers isn't going to win. No, sir. We're voting for Mr. Rogers, not for Mr. and Mrs. Rogers. Moreover, when Mrs. Rogers steps up to the plate and cuts him off because he doesn't look like he's saying the right thing, or he looks like he's going to drift off again into some, you know, golf course mentality, it makes her look strong and him look weaker. That's what I'm saying. And that's what worries me. If he's not tough enough on his own to take on this corrupt administration, how is he going to take on the Islamists and the Russians and the Chinese? That's it. Now, Chris Christie could. Chris Christie is the kind of president we need right now. But that's never going to happen. That's wishful thinking. Tyler, Texas. Christina, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, I have a question that's going to call on your nutritional education. I have a 13-month-old, and I want to know your opinion on giving juice to toddlers. My daycare that I send her to insists that she has juice, so I make a point to make all of her juice fresh. And if you agree with giving her juice,
How old is she?
13 months.
Do you give it to her in a bottle?
No, I insist that her juice is in a sippy cup.
Well, juice is a tricky substance for babies. There's an obsession in America right now with juices. However, juices can be very acidic, number one. Babies' tummies are not made to digest juices necessarily at such an early age. Moreover, there's a danger of the acid, in, particularly in, even in apple juice, of discoloring your baby's teeth, incidentally. I would be very cautious in overdoing the juice. Number one, you know, that's a very important point, because just because it's good for adults doesn't mean it's good for babies. On the other hand, I have to ask you, what type of milk are you feeding her?
At this point, she's on whole milk, cow's whole milk.
She's not, has she ever been breastfed?
Oh, yes, yes. We breastfed her up until 7 months.
Okay, and she's healthy?
Oh, yeah. She did have a bad history of ear infections, which is why I'm against the juice in general.
Wait, wait. She had ear infections, which is why you're against juice?
Well, the sugar and processed juice and juice. I make all of her juices here, but I don't like her to have store-bought juice because of the sugar content.
Right, right. Well, so you know much more about nutrition than the average person. Fructose itself can be quite problematic, and most people don't realize the sugar content of juices. The best answer I could give you, Christina, is the answer you're giving me, which is that your child is healthy, so you must intuitively know what you're doing. Mothers generally know what they're doing if they're this conscious, as conscious as you are. Okay, let's start with that. And if you breastfed the child, and how did you treat her for the ear infections, incidentally?
Well, she has tubes. She does get eardrops, Ciprodex, whenever she has the discharge from her ears.
Oh, so she has an ongoing problem with ear infection. Well, let me give you something to look into. I cannot give medical advice on this program for a couple of reasons, one of which is that I'm not a medical doctor, two, I'm not a pediatrician, and three, this is not a medical advice show. On the other hand, I would suggest very strongly that you look into vitamin A in treating ear infections in infants. Vitamin A is one of the most powerful of all of the vitamins. It's fat soluble, so it has to be used with some degree of caution. However, most babies are completely deficient in vitamin A. And I'm giving you personal experience going back 30 years. Personally, and I've seen it over and over again, vitamin A in the right dosage for babies can reverse ear infections quite rapidly. And I would give it to them with the advice of a pediatrician who's skilled in nutrition, and there may not be too many. There may not be too many holistic pediatricians around, but if there are any, speak to your holistic pediatrician who knows an awful lot about nutrition, about the correct dose of vitamin A drops for your baby. You may find something there for you. Thank you for the call. 1-800-449-8255. Las Vegas, Eric, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, you were right on about Romney's wife stepping on his lines, making him look weak. But also, I think that he better not pick anybody, like you just said, like Christie, to have a much stronger vice president than he is the president. It's going to make him look even weaker.
Yes, I agree with you. He'll pick a weak vice president, not a strong one. And that's what worries me. He needs the exact opposite. He needs somebody opposite to his meekness. You know, I don't know how to put this. I mean, everyone's wringing their hands over Mitt Romney. They know the man is a good man. They know he's a kind man. They know he's an intelligent man, an honest man. But that does not add up to an inspiring candidate, does it?
Well, with that interview you played with his wife, I can understand if he finished the sentence and then she chimed in with something else, but he was still talking. And
yeah,
that makes.
And
him
you
look
know what? You know, there's
now.
More. See, there's more to this than meets the eye. If he is so conditioned to immediately quiet down the minute his wife speaks over him, what do you suspect is going to happen when he debates Obama? I laid awake in bed last night with depression, thinking about those days that are to come.
This is the Savage Nation. Be here or be nowhere.
Savage.
Mitt Romney's going to go out there and Obama's going to wipe the floor with him, because Romney's going to sit there and play defense and he's going to get chopped to ribbons. That's what worries me. And if he's waiting to show his strength, he's waiting a little too long as far as I am concerned.
Now, I want you to know that if I did not believe that my policies and my leadership would help families of color and families of any color more than the policies and leadership of President Obama, I wouldn't be running for president. Now, of course, you know the opposition charges that I and people in my party are running for office to help the rich. Nonsense. The rich will do just fine, whether I'm elected or not. The president wants to make this campaign about blaming the rich, and I want to make this a campaign about helping the middle class in America.
I need the man to hear me. I need him to understand that I've been saying this for months. How many people have to tell the Romney family the things we are telling them, which is get out of your husband's way and let him start speaking about something other than platitudes about jobs. And moreover, when he goes into a debate with Obama, Obama's very street smart. You could say anything you want about him. He's a very intelligent man. He's fast on his feet. He's got a wonderful voice, and he's going to speak over Romney. He's not going to let him talk. Now, add to that the fact that they're going to let a liberal moderator set up the questions, and they're going to destroy Romney before he even gets into the ring. They're either going to use that sellout fraud Bob Schieffer or that other one, Wolf Blitzer, and they're going to chop Romney up simply by the questions they ask. They're never going to permit the questions and about the scandals. They're never going to let the questions. I want me to give you 10 questions they won't ask? How's that for a show topic? 10 questions the liberal moderator will not ask during the presidential debates. 10 questions that the liberal moderator or moderators will never permit to be asked of Obama during the final presidential campaign. I can give you 10 of them right off the top of my head. Let's start with one that's a little offbeat. Sir, as commander-in-chief, do you find yourself to be personally responsible for the death of the 22 Navy SEALs who were killed in that unfortunate accident in the Chinook helicopter? That's like a showstopper. A showstopper. That's question one that won't be asked. Sir, as commander-in-chief, do you feel that your policy in the Middle East, your policies in the Middle East have backfired in that Islamists have now risen to power from Libya to Egypt? Question number two that will not be allowed to be asked. The level of fiscal insanity in the state of California and in the Obama regime. You have a bankrupt nation. You have a bankrupt state. You have two out of control, out of touch leaders, both in the state of California and, of course, in the federal government. And their answer to bankruptcy is to spend more money. It's shocking to believe they can get away with this. If you were bankrupt, would you try to spend your way out of bankruptcy? You wouldn't be able to do it. How can they do it? How do they get away with it? Well, here we have a state of California that's totally bankrupt, totally controlled by the unions, a governor put in by the unions. They're just okay to boondoggle, unlike any in the history of the state. You remember that move? They just approved the railroad to nowhere, a high-speed rail line. That goes nowhere. It will never go anywhere. It'll never be completed. It'll sit there with glistening tracks long after the dinosaurs return to the planet. They'll have tracks somewhere that cost about $100 billion that went right up. It's unbelievable to me how they get away with this. Is there not a Democrat somewhere in California who listens to this show who agrees with me that Governor Brown's funding for the high-speed rail line is fiscal insanity? Or do you Democrats have no concept of reality anymore? Have you become that brainwashed into thinking that because a D does it, it's good? Well, okay, I've stated my position on it. I've stated my position. Barack Obama, same exact thing. We're bankrupt, spend more money. California, bankrupt, spend more money. State of California, federal government, we're being overrun by illegal aliens from Mexico. Answer, eliminate the Border Patrol altogether. Being overrun by drug gangs, answer to the Border Patrol, run away if they shoot at you. Everything is upside down. It's a topsy-turvy world. Meanwhile, we have a heat wave that's breaking records across the nation. Of course, this too shall pass. And once it passes, it'll be forgotten like every other heat wave that has come during the summer and been forgotten. No doubt there'll be a rainstorm that comes very soon, and people start complaining about the rain. And I got to tell you, it's just crazy to me to see what people are willing to put up with. I don't understand what it's going to take for the voters to finally understand how insane the leadership is to spend money like this when there is no money to spend. So if you want to talk about that, okay. Otherwise, we can talk about personal problems, which I'd rather not do. And again, I ask, is Ann Romney doing more harm than good? So let's go to the beginning of this interview. Let's hear clip three now in the interview between Ann and Mitt Romney and the liberal attackers on CBS News.
I want to ask Mrs. Romney this question about some of the attacks that have been levied against you. And when you hear the President of the United States saying that a president needs compassion and that your husband doesn't have it, do you listen to that?
It makes you recognize that they are going to do everything they can to destroy Mitt.
Okay, so let's stop right there. Wrong answer. Wrong answer. That's something she would say in a living room. See, here's another problem. nobody has coached her, they're afraid of her. That's the wrong answer. Instead of taking the defense of saying they're going to destroy Mitt, she should have attacked Obama by saying he's a sleazeball for attacking my husband, who's 100 times a better man than him. And she could have gone on a tear right here against Obama. But again, everyone's afraid of Ann Romney. They're not teaching her what to say. They think she's so smart that she knows how to handle it. She's not skilled in the political arena. Listen to me. Now listen to clip four.
So, you know, they're trying to portray him in a light that is just completely wrong. Why?
Stop.
Why
is Stop. Again, the defense. Wrong. Again, she let the CBS slime ball put them on the defense instead of going on the attack. So let's play clip four again and see the mistakes the Romneys are making.
So, you know, they're trying to portray him in a light that is just completely wrong.
Why? Why is that?
Well, it's politics, as Mitt said. And, you know, I think early on we heard what their strategy was. It was kill Romney. And, you know, that was their memo that came out from their campaign. And it's like, not when I'm next to him, you better not.
What's the ha-ha-ha from the liberal fool? What's the ha-ha-ha? So now we have a woman sitting up there saying that I'm going to defend my husband against his opponent in the presidential election. And he sits there like Mr. Dummy. Why doesn't she just get an oversized pocketbook for him to carry on the stage? And she can now speak, and he could sit there with an S-eating grin. I mean, this is getting worse by the day. This is a mistake. And as good a woman as Ann Romney is, as intelligent as she is, as loyal as she is, she needs to step back and she needs to let Mitt Romney fight the battles, not her.
Savage.